Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Calnez Design and hosted by Calnez himself.
Yate tra sinto rachinzare nare sio kizdo kone, the internet radio. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. Kona a Wednesday evening, 7 o'clock, and na al kiwe kuro e hishis na da huil na do le. Khara shi shiha na an hita shvido le. And all of those, all the candidates, you know, that are listening out there, welcome to each and every one of you. This is Cal Nez, and we have been doing this show for the past, actually started in August of last year, and we appreciate you joining us and listening in to some of the topics and very, very important things that we cover here on this internet radio. Give us the forum to reach out to people from all over the world, literally, and I do appreciate it. This evening, I had invited Marty Shabala, which she's usually here, but she called me earlier, and she's unable to be with us. And she said she regrets not being here, although this was her featured night, but that's okay. I know things do come up that are unexpected. She says she'll be with us next week again. And this evening we're also going to have Bill Donovan also be on the with his news flash commentary at 8 o'clock. And we have Mr. Clarence Chi from the Navajo Nation to talk about the Navajo Nation business regulatory. And it'd be a great opportunity for people to call in. And whatever time that we have left, we'll open up the show. And I also have a guest that I have invited, and I will keep that guest hidden for now and introduce. I'm absolutely looking forward to bringing this secret, well, not secret, but this guest. I think it's a great opportunity to get to know this person. And so, anyway, welcome to each and every one of you. So I have a guess. I would assume that this is probably Mr. Clarence Chi from the Navajo Nation. Can you hear me? Is this Mr. Chi?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. Yateo, thank you for calling in. Let me kind of just set the stage for this evening's show. We've been talking about quite some time about the Navajo Nation government, the Navajo Nation leaders and departments, the direction that the Navajo Nation is going. We're going to continue this, and I think that the nucleus of the entire Navajo Nation in order to make the economy move forward is two words, economic development. We continue to talk about that. We have engaged the Navajo Chamber of Commerce to relaunch here, and we are inviting business people. We're also engaging the Navajo Nation candidates that are now running for various different offices to be able to listen in and also to engage and to discuss what are we talking about in terms of Navajo Nation economic development. And so there are different components. There is a Division of Economic Development, which is headed by Mr. Albert Damon. And also there's several different departments. And one of the departments that I think is very, very important is the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory. And that Business Regulatory is an office that has, I, in my opinion, has one of the greatest responsibilities in the entire Navajo Nation in order to bring about economic development. So I am absolutely looking forward to this discussion. I want to be able to talk about the department, what the philosophies are, where its missions and what its vision statements are, where we're going, what are the statistics, and how do we get the Navajo people to begin to think about being entrepreneurs, to be able to begin to develop the economy within the Navajo Nation, and what is this department's responsibility, or at least from its understanding, as far as one, they basically operate on one document, and that one document is the Navajo Business Opportunity Act. And for those people that are unaware of what the Navajo Business Opportunity Act, it is, just in a very simple statement, it's a Navajo Nation law, and that law specifically outlines, and it says, Navajo first. Navajo, any monies that are being spent from the Navajo Nation government has got to be presented to or offered to the Navajo businesses first before it's considered, and it's based on a priority system. There's a one priority one, priority two, and they engage whether it's on and off the reservation and how much of that. And so we're here to learn and to understand all of that. And so for all of the leaders and political candidates that are out there running, these are some of the things that are people that needs to be considered, needs to be as the frontline agenda to be able to, what are we going to do and how are we going to make this thing work? So I welcome Mr. Clarence Chiyate Nihichete Honzikodo.
Oh, Mr. Nez. Non-Native listeners, welcome to the show, and I'm going to briefly introduce myself in my native tongue. Arizona, the Yetel Zoda, the Chambers, Arizona, the Ari, Yasinasha. So, the economic development of Yah Badas is synonymous. Because what I see is a task is the middle of it. I see,
I'm sure you have a very busy schedule, even after work as well. So I appreciate you giving us this evening to talk with us. Of course. So now, of course, there's the Division of Economic Development. And introduce your department, the name, all the particulars. How big is your staff? Let's just set the stage as what the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department is and all of that. Mr. Chi.
Thank you for this opportunity to talk a little bit about my duties and responsibilities with the Navajo Nation under Division of Economic Development. And I manage the department, Business Regulatory Department. And I'll be talking about it in my native tongue for my Navajo listeners out there. Economic development. I just want to let my listeners know that what I'll be talking about this evening will pertain to my duties and responsibilities to the Business Regulatory Department only. And I will most likely just give an overview of what I do as my job, my duties and responsibilities. So I just want to let you know that other question that is not in my authority to answer or talk about, I probably decline to say so. And then, Mr. Nez. Classy, the chef of the Russian. And so the Sunday, only because you can march on I-40. So I probably might go in and out for at least a good 30 minutes. So.
Okay. Well, that's, hopefully you can stay here with us as long as you possibly can, because there might be callers that might have some questions and some particular things that they want to talk about. So, see what you can do. But we do appreciate you being here with us. So what specifically is the responsibility that you hold with the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department? Yeah, Mr. Chi, we are getting every other word that you're saying, so I'm sure you're saying some very, very important things, but you're breaking up. So in the meantime, well, we actually lost him, so he should be able to call back in. hopefully real soon. But the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department, you know, it was established as a department within the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development. And I want to be able to explore, once he gets back in, to be able to talk about the how much this particular department understands and how in-depth and what are they engaging themselves to, or actually how are they engaging and how are they interfacing with the other departments and the mission of the Division of Economic Development. I'm curious to find out what it is exactly that the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development, there's got to be a goal or goals as to how that they work with each other. And again, when I'm saying interface, one, I believe, keeps data, which is the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department. The other part is the regional business development offices. There's about seven offices, and we brought Elaine Young in from the Navajo Nation here about a couple of shows ago. And so now I'm trying to bring everybody together. And again, just like they say, small business is the backbone of America. Well, comparatively speaking to the Navajo Nation, small business could be the backbone of the Navajo Nation government. But at the foundation is the Navajo Nation, government. How is this? How are they making this thing happen? And how many people out there? How many of you know what Navajo Business Opportunity Act? What that law says? Call in. Let's find out. How many people actually know? So while we're waiting for Mr. Chi to call back in, I will just take an immediate break and see if I can find him somewhere in the mountains by Chambers, Arizona. So again, thank you very much. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez, and we will see you in a bit.
Oh, Summertime go to a sonata tsa zagon. So, but anyway, I believe I've got Mr. Chi back on the air. Are you, is this where Mr. Chi? Hello. Okay. Well, we got, you know, this goes by fairly quickly, these 2 hours. So, so back to the question, you know, what is the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department?
Business Opportunity Act, no, user. Because make sure that all the documents out there not so them take it case and nil not so they done that it are the business what case in the law they not in the other the net the neck at the net cell not on that nilaki because any the cow alia what the land I lay could be because the net not on that the listening because any to be cow chase you know
priority number one is not your heart. See, and here's the name. Now we're holding it. Minigi,
na nesgenel ani na nes dis energy even that so the trust so the ar ep e laz ba hot in la ar ar kurasun da la e laz nan te ar sa da ne ret oden so the to 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 net ego erote to nana sat net or sat petestio so ta e kion nan te e atis ne e priority number 2 isna ere isi biki dat nit e zo zo al indo pe az ane biki el entenige ot ada basa al noda ot a biki nish e si kesa dinne aro I want to briefly talk to you about my part of my responsibility as the manager in, with Business Secretary Department. One of the primary responsibility is that we make sure we monitor and enforce the Business Opportunity Act. We call Navajo Nation Business Opportunity Act. So that gives our Navajo-owned Native people that owns business 100%. We give them priority, first preference, for them to reject a project or not. So in order to qualify priority number one, you have to be a 100% Navajo alien, proof with the CIB, or it can be also 100% other Native-owned business. So you have a preference like that. So we call that priority number one. And then priority number two is anyone or people or any Native that's 51% owner of a business, up to 99% owner, and also has a responsibility or has a, some sort of a decision maker within an organization. They're treated as a priority number two. So what we, our main duty is that the documents, the contract, the paperwork that are passed through our office before it reaches the president's office, we make sure that, not only make sure that all documents are there, but make sure the signatures are there and the amount requested or funded, make sure it didn't go up or down, or if it did, there's justification or any sort of a justification that's required from our office. So we just maintain that we really look at that the procedure was followed, that our Navajo owners or Native owners were given preference over others. That's what we look for. So if there's a discovery that wasn't followed, then your request or your project will be stopped. Well, actually, it won't be stopped. But other parties or whoever is aware of the any violation of the Business Opportunity Act, they have to submit a letter addressed to my department, but not directly to me, but to one of my three senior economic development specialists, and from there they will investigate and determine a decision. If it's positive and everybody's happy, if it's not too good, bad news, negative, and then your responsibility to be adjusted to me directly. And then from here, I will review everything and make a decision. You will get receive a letter from my department. So that's how my little department works. I have 7 people. I've got a program project specialist who specializes in entities that register with our office as a corporate or profit, nonprofit, or LLC, and of that nature, and then I got my 3 economic development specialists who registers and monitors the preference site of the business. And I've got 2 people, and I have 2 people who works in weights and measures. and they go out into the field and make sure you're pumping gas. If you buy 18, make sure you bought the equivalent amount in gallon wise. So they go out there and check, make sure you're paying your money's worth. And not only at gas stations, but in the supermarkets, or in the back in the bar, butcher shop, they also check the little small scales, make sure that the price is right on those little small packages. It is, like you said earlier in your opening, it is a great responsibility, and I do have people that's been there pretty well aware of what they do, and I'm glad that I'm there. So if there's any question, I'm here. I'm here now. I'm parked here.
Well, I appreciate that. So now, as we continue to establish the understanding what the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department is all about, you said that the that you basically you are almost like a licensing office. Now, not necessarily issuing, but just a certificate indicating that they have qualified and to be listed on the source list. Tell us a little bit more about, if a company walks in there, what type of documents are you requiring for them to be able to qualify and to become a source list company, and then tell us a little bit more about the source list.
Okay, number one, I'm glad you asked that question, because I had a gentleman call me right before you called me this afternoon. Same question from a gentleman, a white individual, wanted to know the process, how to get on the source list, and how that benefits him. So I had the opportunity and privilege to talk with this fine gentleman. And it's almost like almost any office here on the Navajo Nation. Anytime you go over there, they want documents after documents after documents. And even though you submit a document, you still want to begin the following year. But anyway, it's just like almost applying for a job. So if you're claiming preference or you want to be considered priority number one, first of all, you have to bring in your CIB, which indicates your percentage of your blood or native blood. So that gives you the preference treatment. If you're 50% and 50% others, and then you get the preference number two. There are some applications that you have to fill out, and as far as fee goes, there is no fee. And we have a website, I believe it's NavajoBusiness.org/com. There are applications where you can fill out the applications, and again, like I said, there's no fee, and you can probably email that or print it and you have to send the hard copy. So my three development specialists will go through the documents, make sure all the documents are there, and they will determine whether you qualify for priority number one or priority number two. And a certificate and a letter will be drafted and sent to you. And again, like you said, that's not a license. It's a certificate which authorizes your company to come on to the Navajo Nation and bid for a project or a contract or do some work. That otherwise, if you're not registered, when they go through the bidding process, you automatically lose. So that's one of the benefits. You know, if you specialize in a certain field of science, you know, where are my people are not, you know, you come in and do the work. So it's just that type of a thing. So, but again, like you said, you know, it's not a business license. But we are in the process. I want to say that it is in the process, and we should be able to have our business license program up and running very soon. And But it's there, so they're able to have people, like you said earlier, global, to go online and register with us. And like I said, I came back from the Indian Country Conference last week, and all I've heard on there was keep the money on Indian reservation, not only Navajo, but every reservation. And I think like, that's what people's main focus was. So we're moving in that direction. So the socialist. So once you register with our office and once you're determined, eligible for group one, which is prayer number one, or group number two, prayer number two, then they'll have a source list. You'll be added on the source list. So when somebody's looking for a contractor or somebody is looking for somebody who specializes in certain things, they'll look through the source list, and they'll find you, contact you, email you, or write to you, or call you, or, you know, that's one of our monitoring tools. We ask them, how did you contact these entities? So you can contact them, and again, like I said, you know, you have to contact at least three people or more. So once you register with us, once you get your certificate in good standing, you will be on the source list, and it's updated every month, and it's on the website also.
Okay, so now once you get on the – now, so the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department, the responsibility is to identify and to be able to maintain a list of qualified businesses. Either they're then established after that based on the degree of ownership, whether they're priority one or priority two. And then once they get their approval and they are a certified Navajo business or Navajo preferred businesses, then they make it on to the source list. Now, the next question is that the Navajo Nation, central government, of course, is located in Window Rock, Arizona. Your office is located in St. Michael's. And from there, how do you now disseminate and how do you engage every department within the Navajo Nation? The Navajo Nation government is inclusive of central government all the way to the chapter houses. How do you get this information out to them?
Good question, sir. We have a election every other year. 2 years ago, we had the council delegate, not the council delegate, but the chapter officials. The chapter officials in Manaka. We had the chapter officials elected, new ones and old ones, and then this year,
Hello?
Still there?
You're breaking up again.
Okay. Hold on, let me start. What about now?
Okay, good.
Okay. 2 years ago, we had the chapter officials election. This year, we're having the council delegate and the president election. So every 2 years, you have election. So during those times, we not only schedule a presentation, training, and education that you're talking about, but also people like the local government people, the one that runs the chapters, they request this, and as an agency, we do the presentation, or maybe at the chapter level, and even to programs and departments when they come and ask for this. We go out there, we send our people out there and do presentation to divisions or programs. And then we do have flyers, and then, like I said, we do have the radio there. Hello?
Yeah, you're on air.
Okay.
You're on air. Can you hear us?
Yeah. So even the conferences, that they have, like in Flagstaff or maybe Albuquerque, Phoenix, sometimes they will have my department on the agenda where other business owners in Arizona, New Mexico, and other states that are interested, that are attending those conferences, to get to learn about my program. And I'm pretty sure they take it home and educate their own people, too, how the program is working. So we do disseminate information in that fashion also. And I'd like to thank all the people that are listening out there that have been to these conferences and heard my people. It's because of you that they were giving out the message out there again. And then again, every little bit helps. So even tonight, talking about my duty and responsibility with that department, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And to all of the listeners.
So just to reiterate the fact that you you said that you go out to the various chapters and you make presentations as well as the border towns if necessary. Now, another part of the responsibility while you're disseminating information out into the community, how do you track how many contracts are actually being given out from every department?
Well, we clear about an average of 240 contracts per month. And it's all in our system. As far as statistics go, maybe money-wise or what company and the location from where, that my department probably will not have that. But as far as maybe based on money, like I said, this information that you're asking for is most likely Office of control these contracts. So it's probably a better figure or statistic-wise that information could be extracted from them.
Okay. You're kind of breaking up a little bit there again. Oops. Hello?
Yeah.
Are you there? Yeah. You're kind of breaking up a little bit there. Okay. I can hear you now. Mr. Chi, are you still there? Well, we just lost him again. Hopefully he calls back. So in the meantime, I am going to bring this caller on, and once Mr. Chi calls back in, we will ask him some questions, and maybe we can start talking about some of the questions here. We got a caller, 7612. Can you hear me? 7612. Hello? I can hear you, and it looks like Marty is also on the air right now, and so while we're waiting for Mr. Chi to call back in, maybe you guys can voice some of your opinions, and then we'll engage Mr. Chi back in here. Marty, what's your question? What's your comment?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Yeah, eh?
I could not believe that you were on the air this evening. I'm so sorry I'm kind of late on to the air, but I guess, what are you guys talking about? I kind of got on late. Is it about economic development?
Yeah, we're talking about the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department. So.
Oh, is that a big monster?
Yeah. You are on air right now. You're live.
Oh. Oh my goodness. Well, I guess my thought is that business regulatory, it is really a huge issue, and I didn't really quite understand what he meant by 246 contracts. Is that out of his office, or is that nationwide that goes out every month? I mean, that's a lot of contracts every month within the Navajo Nation. So you're telling me that's like over 24,000 contracts per year?
That's exactly what he said. He says there's that many contracts going out.
He wouldn't identify who the contracts are actually going to or how are they logging it. I mean, I guess my biggest concern is that if there are that many contracts going out of the Navajo, then it would be interesting to find out who are these contracts being issued to. Are they being issued to the A-list within the Navajo Nation, meaning the preferred listings, or are they going to non-native off the reservation? Is that more money of Navajos going off the reservation?
Yeah, exactly. And those are some of the concerns about why I think that the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department holds a huge responsibility. Because according to the Navajo Business Opportunity Act, it specifically says Navajo first opportunity, and then how they identify that first opportunity is that they go to priority one and priority two. And then there's a very, very specific steps to go out there and how the contracts are open based on priority one or priority two. And then after that, but even before the contracts are issued, they must be, there are specific steps that every department must take. Number one is that there's got to be public notices out there. Number two is then that they have got to have a job listing and be notified and established based on a budget that it must go to the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department. And then from there, jointly, then they go out there and send this out. And there are, of course, there are some steps, and these are some of the things that I personally, which I think is basically what you're asking, is the same question, is that how are they able to monitor the number of contracts that are going out? Well, here's one thing that I said last week. You know, there's only 194 businesses that are listed on the Navajo Nation source list. You know, I mean, that's just a, you know, once, I hope he calls back, and he hasn't yet. So why is that such a huge disparity with our population of 350,000 Navajos? There's only 194 Navajo-owned businesses. So, yeah. I don't know if that answers your or at least addresses some of your issues. Very, very good questions, by the way, Marty.
Well, you know what, Cal? I guess my other concern is because of the disparity that you have in the number of sole proprietors or whatever the Navajo Nation businesses, how many of those businesses are actually getting contracts from the Navajo Nation? And not only that, I would like to see, I for one as a Navajo citizen, would like to see out of those 200 and some odd number of contracts going out every month, how many of those contracts are going to the same business off the reservation, and what are they for?
Well, certainly. I mean, those are some of the questions that I sure wanted to ask him. So it looks to me like we won't get that, you know. Let me see if I can bring him back on. There's another caller also. I know you can hear me because we can hear you as well. 7612.
You're on air. Can you hear me? Do you have a comment? I guess not. So, yeah, we're going to continue. Marty, let me just put you back on hold, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can bring Mr. Chi back on. So hang on, and I will be right back. Mr. Chi, I can hear you now. Are you back with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll go right to the questions. We have a caller here that wants to ask you a question.
Okay.
Marty, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Chi, I just want to know how many of those 247 contracts that go out every month, various vendors, those go to the sources that are the that whole nation priority one.
Mr. Chi, did you get that?
What was the question? How many contracts?
Marty, you're kind of breaking up just a little bit. So can you ask that question again, please?
Yes. How many of those contracts out of the 247 that he stated earlier, how many of those go to Priority One list? of nation business.
Oh boy, we're having some major communication issues here because the first part of your question was very clear, but the last part you're breaking up. But anyway, Mr. Chi, what she's asking is that how many of those contracts on your source, or how many of those contracts that you just mentioned, 200 and something, or 240 contracts per month that's going out, how many of those are actually going to Priority One or Navajo-owned businesses? Mr. Chi, did you get that? I can't hear you.
Hello?
Yes, did you hear that question?
Yes. Hello?
I can hear you. Well, I guess we're just going to have to bring this conversation to an end, but Marty, you asked a very, very good question, and we just lost him again. So, Marty, are there some information that you want to share with us that you really, what your feelings in reference to how that this department is functioning?
I don't want to say how this department is functioning. That is too funny. But I guess my main concern is that with the priority listings, I know that every contract that goes out there may be specialized in one way or another to various entities within the department. However, I still believe that although Navajo Nation Priority One listing doesn't have all the specialties that the nation is requesting, they should at least give some of the businesses a chance to make, I guess, make their pitch for some of the things that are going out. I just kind of feel like way what the just by listening to Mr. Chi this a few minutes ago.
Yes, Clarence Chi. He's the director of the Business Regulatory Department.
Yeah, I just kind of got the impression that a lot of the contracts or the business licensing that goes on there, that's another issue, the licensing. But a lot of the contracts that go out, I think just goes like to all the businesses that have been within. They're just like ongoing, you know. One contractor finishes a contract, and then they just push them on to another contract because they're still within that. Within that department, you know, it's kind of a sticky issue, but all in all, I really believe that they need to change their business licensing procedures too, because it takes too long to get a business license within the Navajo Nation.
Yeah. Marty, hold that thought, and I will hang in there with us, because I like this conversation, so I'll bring you back in on the other side of this break here. Okay, we're talking about Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department, and we're having some major issues with Mr. Clarence Chi, who hopefully he'll come back with us, and that he'll next time around because this is a real critical. It's a very, very important question, and specifically why that I said that how is this functioning? I hope that the telephone connection is not an indicator of how this particular department is functioning, because I think we have a lot of questions, and so it's important that we talk, that we find out about it, and I think that tracking this entire process is going to be very, very important. We're talking about economic development. This is one of the most crucial and absolutely important department, and I really would like to have ask Mr. Chi what specifically that he is you know, as far as the really philosophical understanding behind the entire intent of Navajo Business Opportunity Act.
At every Navajo election, something will be brought up that could
Bill,
be a...
I'm sorry, my fault. Can you start over?
Okay, I'm glad to. There's one thing that is certain about every Navajo election. Something will be brought up that could be a game changer. This year, it's a proposal that's been submitted by Russell Begay, the council delegate from Shiprock. He wants to limit a tribal president to 2 terms, which is what the council approved back in 1990 when it was reforming the tribal government. But 4 years ago, the Navajo Supreme Court ruled that it met 2 consecutive terms, which means that a candidate can sit out a term and then run again for another 2 terms. Begay wants to change that to 2 terms in a lifetime. He wants to take this to the Navajo voters in a referendum as soon as possible, so that Joe Shirley Jr., who already has been certified as a candidate in the upcoming election, won't be able to run. Tribal election officials have questioned whether this can be done, given the fact that the ballots for the primary will have to be printed in about 4 weeks, and there are no council sessions being held until July. There could, of course, be a special session, but even if the council passed the resolution, which is not a certainty, and the voters approve it, Begay still has a major obstacle he's going to have to overcome, the Navajo Supreme Court. If Shirley makes it through the primary and the voters approve the 2-term limit, the Supreme Court will get involved. In past decisions, the court has come down strongly in favor of allowing the Navajo people to determine who they want to be president. They also have ruled against other efforts by the council to change the rules in the middle of the game or proceedings. But the council will be taking a big risk passing the resolution, calling for a referendum, because it may just bring up the subject that has been laying dormant for a long time, term limits for members of the council. The subject came up about a decade ago, and it's come up again and again, as the council has lost respect because of its refusal to accept changes proposed by Shirley and other leaders. The scandal involving misappropriation of millions of dollars of discretionary fund money also hasn't helped them gain any respect. So if the question of term limits did come up before the voters, it's likely that a lot more would be in favor of imposing term limits on council delegates rather than on the president. This is Bill Donovan with a newsflash from the Navajo Reservation.
You're listening to Navajo Digital Radio, politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that's raising standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Navajo Graphic Design and Advertising Agency, CalNez Design.
And we're back. This is CalNez, and you are talking to, we're on Politics on the Navajo Nation. Yeah, we were talking about the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department. And since we lost Mr. Chi, we'll just have to have some concluding comments. And I know that Marty, who's calling in
from somewhere anyway, has had some any further thoughts on what you were saying? Are you there, Marty?
Hello?
Well, I'm not sure what's going on here, but she's not back, but so she's not hearing us, at least. Marty, can you hear me? Wow, that's interesting. Well, I apologize for all these technical issues. Let me try again. Okay, Marty, can you hear me now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I'm not sure what was going on. Yeah, I can hear you.
You were asking if I had any comments on the RBDO?
RBDO or either, you know, I mean, just what's your last thoughts on this? Because we're going to close this segment up, and you'll be our last person who's going to comment on this topic this evening, at least.
I guess my concern on this entire issue is that, yes, granted, there are various contracts that go out for specialty services and what have you, but I do believe that the Navajo Nation really needs to, if they're going to expand on economic development, they need to think of the priority listing first, go there and try to help some of the people who have their small businesses on the reservation, help them before we help other people off the reservation. I mean, they're always talking about keeping the money on the reservation, but yet when it comes down to really trying to walk the talk or whatever that saying goes, is that it never happens. It does not happen. Money goes off of the reservation like in millions of dollars almost every year, and none of that. Some of that should be going to the Navajo-owned businesses, you know, for anything, even just to buy maybe, I don't know, a box if somebody's catering supplies, you know, something. It's just not kosher to the Navajo Nation to say don't take money off the reservation, but yet at the same time they give out all these contracts to non-natives. It just doesn't make sense. And I guess the other comment that I have is on that Navajo politics with Bill Donovan regarding the two terms for the Navajo Nation president and whatever. I really think it's kind of late in the game for Mr. Begay to be bringing that issue up. It should have been done right after the elections last year. I mean, a couple years ago when they had the president's election. It should have been done at that time. Right now it's kind of a little late in the game. Maybe that's just their deterrent to not have President Shirley or ex-President Shirley run for president, but I really think that it's some sort of a maneuver on their part, and I do think also that there should be term limits on the council delegates as well. Some of the council delegates have been in there forever, and you know, none of them have really done anything to begin but to spend money and to hide money. So that's, I know there's a lot of, people are probably going to tell me, you know, you don't need to be saying all that about the Navajo Nation on air or whatever, but it's true. I mean, who doesn't know that the Navajo Nation is going through all these problems with financially and corruption and all that? Everybody knows. So what is the problem? You know, you got to get to the root of the problem, and if that is one of the roots, then so be it.
Yeah. Okay, Marty, very, very, very good. I appreciate that comment, and I'm sure you'll be calling back in, and I appreciate you being a listener. And so let me see if I can bring one other caller on if they can hear. Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Could you identify yourself, and if you have a comment, you're on air with us.
Okay, yeah, good evening, everybody. I'm calling from Tuba City. I was just sitting here listening and thinking about the business environment on the reservation, on the Navajo Nation, and when you take into account, you know, the past history our growth or lack of growth, you know, our business development has just been at a stalemate for years and years, and really nothing has really been developed. Nothing has really been promoted, you know, as far as business development is concerned. Nothing that's obvious anyways. And I just wanted to make an example. There was a close to $7 million project that was done to a school that I know about, where a lot of the contractors that dealt with different HVAC system, people that install control systems, low voltage stuff, high voltage stuff, electricians, all those contracts, subcontracts, went off the reservation. It went to companies out of Phoenix, Albuquerque, and other places. Labor unions, welders, pipe fitters, they all went off the reservation. And how can the regulatory department promote Navajo business preference? I mean, like, you know, we hear every now and then that they, but I don't think it's assertive or progressive enough to ensure that the local contractors get a fair chance at landing some of these contracts and stuff. Mr. Chi stated 247 contracts a month. That's over. That's over 3,964 contracts a year.
Yep.
That he's seen that goes out in contract forms to Navajo business contractors. And just to take a 5-year segment, that's over 19,820 contracts that have gone out in the last 5 years. My question is, where are they? What happened to them? I mean, that's been a deep concern of mine. And we've continued to go from year to year, from one tribal presidency administration to the next, and we're not seeing growth. What's the matter? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with our multi-million dollar business development department, economic development department? There's millions that are spent. Maybe they should, you know, allocate more money of that towards research and development and study why and how we can improve our businesses and stuff here on the reservation. And another example that I... Go ahead.
Yeah, do you think... do you think that the there's any way of them tracking that information, the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department, as to knowing exactly what every department on the Navajo Nation is giving out in terms of their allocated money for contracts?
There should be, and they must. I mean, with as much people, as much money is in that program, they should be able to, you know, have whip out information and statistics right at, I mean, just like that. Why can't we? We have the main director here, just hardly not even knowing what he's talking about to me, and not even up to date on statistics. It's almost a joke. It really is. When we take into account, you know, are the conditions of our reservation, the lack of economic development. Do we hear that economic development?
So in your opinion, what do you think the actual Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department, in your opinion, whose side do you think that they're on as far as what you know of them? Are they on the business side or are they on the Navajo Nation government side?
They're definitely on the Navajo Nation side. They're definitely not on the small-time somebody, an individual that is trying to start a business. I know I've gone through some personal experience years ago. I just ran into a brick wall and trying to get something started and stuff. I never really felt the support, the guidance, and the technical expertise to try to help me get a business started years ago. I gave up. And, you know, our nation, our leadership needs to open up their mind, think outside the box, and take a look at around globally. Take a look at some of those Arabs. I'm not sure if they're Arabs, but those there's a foreign country that has a aggressive economic development program that they initiated 10, 15 years ago. And if you know, if you travel to I-40 all the way from California through Phoenix, through Flagstaff, through Gallup, through Albuquerque, a lot of those motels and restaurants are owned by those cultures from back east, from India. They own those motels and restaurants right along the main tourist corridor, along the freeway. And I was talking to one of them years ago, and they were saying that our country, they promote economic development, business development worldwide, and they have a business incubator program in their own country, and they help people get into business in the United States and set up and buy motels, transactions, customer service, how to run a motel, restaurant management type programs. And that's proof enough that if you make a major effort to promote economic development, programs like that can succeed. But we here on the Navajo Nation, we just need to wake up. It's the old regulations after regulations after regulations. They are designed to stop somebody to develop a business. My personal opinion is they need to put in trash 80% of those regulations and open the door a little bit. That's my personal opinion.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. Very, very powerful comments there. And so, well, here we are. We are going to continue to talk about that. Those are some very, very important issues and things that we need to be concerned about. And I think that gentleman just hit it right on the head. Here's one thing that I totally know about, and that is the Navajo Nation started this Navajo Business Opportunity Act, and simply because they were saying when the United States government started the Welfare Act, the Navajo Nation leaders, council, they basically wanted to put together an opportunity for Navajos to get into business, and they wanted to go in there and give the Navajo people the opportunity to be able to engage their entrepreneurship. And that's why that they started this, and so they instituted a law called the Navajo Business Opportunity Act, and they basically said, yes, this law should be able to take care of our people, give. If it's Navajo money, comparatively speaking, a lot of the people who in other cultures, when one person comes to America, they basically engage and help each other and work with each other, and they lend money to each other. They keep the money within their own community, and that's how that they were able to succeed. Somebody might not have all the money coming in from another country, but they come in. And then they, and so now the Native Americans, I mean, certainly we're having some major economic issues, not only on the Navajo Nation, but every, you know, most tribes. Well, maybe not the tribes back east, but, you know, as far as on our side, and specifically the Navajo Nation, we have economic issues that we are constantly dealing with. So now the Navajo Nation government then puts and says, you know what, but we need to have an office that is within the Navajo Nation government. And that office needs to be fighting and watching and monitoring the Navajo Nation government itself so that the Navajo, that this law works. And so they establish an office, and that office is the Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Office. They're supposed to be our advocate fighting on behalf of the businesses to ensure that every department. And how are they going to do that? They have to have a list. They've got to be able to institute this entire Navajo Business Opportunity Act so that it gives the Navajo money to Navajo businesses. And so that's really in a nutshell. So thank you very much. This is Cal Nez, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation.
It's time.
Yes, it is time. I wanted to throw my little man in there to say his little, it's time. Well, we're going to now go into another segment, and I've been really, 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 really looking forward to the to this segment for quite a long time, and I think the time has come that we have Navajo people who are absolutely capable, they are able, and they are not only on the Navajo Nation, but off the Navajo Nation as well. And a lot of the times, people are overlooked, not noticed, and but none at the same time that we have people who are, like I said, very capable. And here's a prime example that I think that she brings an incredible notoriety to the Native people in a major metropolitan setting. And you probably read in the Navajo Times last week where it's talking about this individual. And she is our mystery guest this evening. And she will introduce herself. And to be able to, I've known her for a long time. And what she has done for people from all walks of life, not only just the Native people, but for people of different genders, different personal walks of life, and whatever they're doing in terms of their status in society, and how that this person has worked on a not only on a localized level, but on in one of the major cities, and their policies and their policies development, and also within a state, in this particular case, in the state of Utah. And not only that, is taking it on a national level to Washington, D.C., to major congressional people, to senators, to major policymaker at a national level. And also, I'll even take it one step further, the experience that she carries is something that goes basically all the way to Geneva, Switzerland. As a representative of to the United Nations, as the United part of the United States delegation. And so so the dynamics and the application, how that this incredible person is able to make it up the road,
And these are some of the things that the Navajo people that we ought to be thinking about, that we are capable, that we have the people that can engage in this. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce her. Well, actually, she will introduce herself and her clan, where she's from. And so here she is, and I don't have to have any technical issues unless my own phone explodes. So welcome.
Good evening. My name is Yolanda Francisco Nez, and I'm from Fort Defiance, Arizona. I reside in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I am the current coordinator for the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office of Diversity and Human Rights. Very glad to be here this evening. One thing that you brought up was the article that came out this past, well, it was a couple weeks ago, I think, in the Navajo Times. And I had the real honor of being able to go to Geneva, Switzerland, and represent local government, as well as my boss, who also attended, who is the mayor of Salt Lake City, Mayor Ralph Becker. We were selected as a part of a delegation, the United States delegation team, that presented on the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights in Geneva, Switzerland, at the United Nations. It was quite an experience to be there with a number of high-level executives from the Obama administration, as well as individuals from the who represented places like the Department of the Interior and the Department of Justice, and especially the United States State Department. It was quite a unique occasion. I had never been to Geneva, Switzerland, and it was a time that, you know, I kind of in my head conceptualized the ways that what it would feel like to address the United Nations. And once the opportunity came along and we represented ourselves, it was great to be able to speak to individuals on the human rights side who represented the Human Rights Committee of this particular covenant, and be able to be there with officials and talk about really what the United States is doing in terms of human rights. How are we focusing our efforts on domestic human rights, and how are we faring in terms of, as a country, how are we treating our own people? And so oftentimes when people discuss human rights, they're thinking more on an international level. But really one of our focuses in Salt Lake City has been on looking at domestic human rights at a local level. And so through this opportunity that we had, we've had the occasion through the years that I've been with the mayor's office, I've been employed there for, I've served with the last four administrations at an executive level. And one thing that we looked at about 7 years ago was a set of human rights initiatives that Mayor Becker, then Ralph Becker, actually platformed on. And one of those really monumental and historic pieces of legislation came through the recognition and really implementing a local ordinance that said that you can no longer discriminate against individuals because of their sexual orientation or gender identity and in housing and employment. And this was a really big, it took about 2 years to pass this legislation. But as a result of that, then came another, I have a 9-member voluntary human rights commission that I work with, and we were able to conduct dialogue throughout the community on issues of discrimination and issues of race and issues regarding women. One of the highlights that the United States State Department recognized is the fact that Salt Lake City has let out on these kinds of pieces of legislation with regard to civil and human rights. So more recently, you may have seen in the article, again, I'm referring back to the Navajo Times article, which in which I mentioned that I was really proud to sit on my first night at the mission home of the United States with a number of NGOs, and on the very front row sat my fellow brothers who were in the front row and dressed in their Navajo dress and attire, I should say. It felt really good to be able to sit down with them and be able to be on the front row. It felt very comforting to know that I wasn't the only Diné person there. And so one thing that I mentioned in the article was about with regard to women. We last year my office published a report on the status of women, and we looked at more specifically, talked about issues regarding women in education, public safety, economics, and politics. And it was a great occasion to be able to go to the United Nations and travel with other women who are in leadership and really converse about some of the challenges that we're facing, especially in terms of violence against women in our country, and especially violence against women among women in Indian country. So with that, Cal, I'll turn the time back over to you.
I appreciate that. Well, just like I said, I think that sounds very, very impressive as far as the portfolio that you're developing. Now, I want to just get back into the, as far as your experience in terms of the knowledge that you have gained in a governmental setting and how a major metropolitan city works. You work for Mayor Rocky Anderson, former Mayor Rocky Anderson of Salt Lake City, Utah. And so that's where your journey began. And then just tell us more about that part of your career that you have started.
Well, actually, when I had absolutely no intention of coming into local government, I really went into this very interested. I have a family who has brought me up in being socially aware of the environment around me and also very politically active family. And growing up, I learned that, you know, you can't just be status quo. If you believe strongly enough in something, you should go after it. And so one day I had the opportunity as a volunteer during a transition team to work with or to actually showcase the Navajo culture and other cultures in the West among mayoral candidates. And really had a chance to speak one-on-one with these candidates and tell them about the issues facing our American Indian populations in Utah. And it turns out that just on one of those occasions, it happened to be that Rocky Anderson had won the election and was looking for people to serve on his transition team and had called our office. Back then I worked for CalNez Design, and he called Cal, and he was tracking me down, and Cal asked him, and he found me. And so one night I was asked to stay late after a transition team meeting, and he offered me a job, and I turned him down, and he offered again, and I turned him down. And the second time I went and consulted with my family and looked at how this would affect them. But to make a long story short, I was hired and went on to become an administrative assistant, as well then was promoted I actually developed an international intern program and then went to interview when a new mayor came in, interviewed for the job, for the current job that I have now in working in policy, which has been very, very exciting, a lot different than the work that I did previously. I've learned that, you know, I have my master's degree in business administration. And one thing that I've learned about local government is that we don't have all the answers. It really does take a collaborative effort for people who are passionate about a cause to come forward and advocate on that cause until something has changed. And really for oftentimes with our, well, we have had that experience when we passed our non-discrimination ordinances in the city. You know, we've had several, about nearly 18 cities that have passed the same piece of legislation in Utah.
Well,
but the state of Utah at the legislature hasn't passed it yet. But we're not giving up. You've got to be passionate. But remember, all the way along this, Cal, government doesn't have all the answers.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But let's just go ahead and steps at a time here. Okay. So now you're working for Mayor Anderson, and, of course, you went through the Olympics with him, and where you actually absolutely saw some international presidents and what have you, and you were there side by side with Mayor Rocky Anderson.
Yes, I was. It was a wonderful occasion to be able to get to know how cultures around the world interact with the United States, and it was a very interesting experience to be able to interact with individuals who came from a number of other cultures and speak a different language, but really exciting to be able to be part of that in the capital city of Utah.
And then shortly after that, then you really decided to kind of re-engage and challenge yourself to another level of education.
Right. I actually earned my bachelor's degree, my undergraduate degree in business management, and that really was an important part of my career, being able to work for someone who really allowed me to take the extra time to go and seek out and complete my degree that I had started many, many years previously.
And so you got your MBA?
I did. I got my MBA during my employment with Mayor Becker. And again, these really wonderful, supportive people who were able to just be so generous by allowing me to go and further my career and grow as an individual and be able to learn more about how the business world functions. Particularly, you know, you can sit in a classroom and learn theory night after night after night, and there were plenty of heartaches along the way. It was really an amazing experience to sit down with other individuals who may not be your typical student, but these were non-traditional students who had full-time jobs and still were able to maintain their employment and support their families along the way.
Yeah, and so now you're working for, and then, so with that arsenal in your pocket, so to speak, you then all of a sudden went from being an assistant of Mayor Anderson, and then a new administration comes in, and then all of a sudden you are now the boss of one of the biggest department or the coordinator. You know, I mean, it's just a title. But you absolutely oversee this entire huge department for a new administration.
Right. With Mayor Becker, under Mayor Becker's administration, those set of human rights initiatives that he platformed on during his campaign was a really crucial piece of my work in the beginning. Since then, I've had the opportunity to travel many different places around the world, including Torino, Italy, and we were invited by then Mayor Bloomberg's office in New York City to make a presentation. And by the German Marshall Fund, who sponsored my trip to Italy, that was a really important occasion to talk about the work that we do with not only the LGBTQ community, but also women and refugees and immigrants, we were able to establish an award-winning programming that you can find on our Salt Lake City website at slcgov.com/ODHR. And there we have a set of classes that we offer through the Human Rights Education Project, where we've taught it in 16 different languages, and we are teaching individuals about their legal rights in employment and housing.
Yeah, so that's so now you're, but one of the, in my opinion, one of the most historic thing that you ever did, which is really just beyond comprehension, not only just in a state that is very, very perceived as an ultra-conservative state, there was your department, or actually the office of the mayor, Mayor Ralph Becker, was very, very focused at bringing together an initiative. And so you and your department were engaged with now with an individual who is now the Salt Lake County Mayor, Ben McAdams. Tell us about what that particular initiative, what, I mean, it's just beyond, it is historic in the state of Utah. Tell us about that journey.
So, as I mentioned earlier, the set of human rights initiative that the mayor, actually the candidate who was running for mayor, Ralph Becker at that time, it was really important for him. He had come, he had served actually as a legislator in the Utah State House of Representatives for many, many years, and in fact was a minority leader. And he also, by his background, included having a law degree as well as owning his own business in planning. So he was a city planner. So what he brought to this during the campaign was really, he had always had, he has a history at the legislature of seeking equality for all people. And he had, it took him about 12 years, but they did eventually pass. He played an instrumental role in passing the hate crimes law in the state of Utah. So based on that platform that he used in the human rights education, or human rights initiative, very early on, in fact, the day that I interviewed with him, he was very generous and very clear about what he expected the person who was going to hold this position to accomplish. And quite honestly, I looked at the set of initiatives, and I just it looked really nearly impossible, honestly. I thought, how can we pass a piece of legislation for the LGBT community in this kind of environment, political environment in the state of Utah? I mean, it felt like the weight of the world, quite honestly. Once I knew I got the job, it felt like the weight of the world was something I knew that I, that was on my back and my responsibility. Very specifically, my job was outlined for me, and I was really, you know, up for the challenge. And so being able to come into the office, be hired, and see that I had a number of human, a whole 9-member human rights commission to work with, felt so much better that I wasn't going to be doing this alone. And the fact that the mayor, time and time again, what I'll take with me into my next phase of life, is that the mayor has taught me that collaboration is really important. And I can't say enough about the fact that, you know, one person doesn't have all the answers. It really does genuinely take a person who's able to work well with a number of people to accomplish the goal. And that's what we were able to do. It took a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of programming. But in the end, we were able to write a discrimination report and offer forward a set of human rights policy recommendations. And by the time that we had made the rounds and had negotiated with not only our stakeholders, including people who were involved in the realtor, the property industry, the realtor industry, as well as people that were kind of concerned about the fact that we were offering special privileges. And really, there's no special privilege about it. When you talk about equality for all and equality for everyone, you cannot leave out any part of that. It's really achieving equality for all through policy, and that really has been the whole purpose of my career over the last 7 years.
So, in other words, you got this nearly impossible legislation in a ultra-conservative state of Utah on behalf of the LGBTQ community, and had it pass at a city level, but focus more now. You guys are now engaged in a on a state level, and so you're basically taking this. Now they're using that as a template, so to speak, nationwide. So and that's. So now you're doing that, and well, tell me, here, look at me. you're from where originally?
Fort Defiance, Tejasco.
Tell us where all your background information as far as like, who your mentor, so to speak, from your foundation?
Absolutely. From the beginning, when I was raised in Fort Defiance, Arizona, there's one significant person in particular who really supported my whole being, and I pay her tribute, especially this coming Mother's Day on Sunday. I pay my mom, Vivian Yaza, a tribute to the woman that I have become, as well as Shemaya, all of them, both Rose Yazzie, Charlotte Francis, and Bernice Honani, who has also played a very instrumental part of my life. They all cumulatively have taught me that you can't quietly walk away when you care about people, and that you really do need to pick yourself up and move forward and show the initiative and the passion that you have where there's an injustice. And so these women have taught me those things, as well as my grandfather. You know, oftentimes I'm giving speaking engagements in different places, and as a part of my bio, I make sure that everyone knows that I am a granddaughter to a Navajo code talker, my late grandpa, Vincent Yaza, who was a Navajo code talker, who in fact was a man who taught me a lot about trials and being able to overcome trials and significant hardship. He decided to join the military and ride horseback all the way across from Fort Defiance to San Diego with a group of his friends to join the military. And I have never forgotten that when I'm out there working and I'm hitting a wall and I'm burning out, I remember that the sacrifice that my grandpa made for this country, and I feel very, very fortunate that I am now where I am in the mayor's office and being able to serve the residents of our city.
Yeah, and so I gotta just congratulate you on the being the person that you are, because you've now we happen to know one individual that is over in Paris, France, that we are so absolutely we've become a international association, so to speak.
Absolutely. We Cal and I are married almost 30 years, and we have 5 beautiful children, and one of our sons is actually serving a LDS church mission in Paris, France. And before I start choking up, I think I better turn the time back over to you, Cal.
Well, I'm just so glad that you took this little time away from your little movies, or your little relaxation time. But, it's amazing that I would just honestly say that you have been quite a wonderful partner, and just to see the growth that you've made, the determination that you said, I'm going to go out, yet never forgetting the roots of where you're coming from, and always acknowledging your mentors. And one of the key people that I think that you also always speak about is the late senator, I believe, legislator Art Hubbard, was one of your protege, so to speak, politically. And but I tell you, thank you for always being making us a great team. And so, you know, the experience that like we've been up there side by side, so to speak, at the governor's office, mayor's office, and, you know, major functions. And so it's been quite a joyous ride for me that that you've been there. So proud of you. I think that the Navajo Nation can absolutely be proud of, you know, people like yourself to be able to deliver that experience, not just on a localized level, but worldwide. So, and I do want to wish you a happy Mother's Day. And so the last few minutes are yours now.
Thank you, Cal. I it's funny because now all of your listeners know that we're husband and wife, and you're giving me all these nice words of adoration without bias. So I do want to say that I feel, again, very blessed and very fortunate that I'm able to use my expertise and my background and my education to help the people of our city accomplish equality. And my hope is that we will continue to progress and challenge ourselves and create policies that are specific to making a world that is full of compassion, reason, and stability, and especially equality through domestic human rights efforts. Thank you.
Well, there she is, and you've heard it. I think that the dynamics of people, whether you know them personally, locally, on the reservation or off the reservation, I think that we're capable, that we're able to deliver, and that we're able to have the ability. And I think that not only it's happening all the way across the United States of America and across Indian nations. I think that, I've just been very honored to always be part of this incredible duo for the past 30 years. She has always been the backbone of most of everything that I have done in terms of being an entrepreneur and also being a proponent of very different initiatives within the state of Utah and throughout the United States on behalf of the Native American community. And so now that with the experience, that she has, it's been amazing. And not only that, with the education of having a master's degree and in our own way to be able to be having the experience to share as a entrepreneur,
as a business owner, and now she is now internationally engaged through a major metropolitan state. It's just been an incredible thing, and I wanted to bring her on this evening before, of course, this Sunday is Mother's Day. So my honoring of her as a mother and also as a, can I say it, as a grandma. And so I am very just honored. And she so honama ni mabe das ni to list anos to shin za da his ago a kot o ein she ibe das ni to list. So again, thank you Yolanda Francisco Nez for being a member of this of our incredible team. Thank you Shehatlan Aro. So again, all you mothers out there, Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day, and all you fathers, don't forget Mom's Day, and all you people out there, don't forget your mom. You know, some of us are, or some of you are very fortunate and very lucky to have had, that you have a mother that you've known, and so, and it's beautiful. So, again, this is Cal Nez. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. Next week, we will be most likely airing from either the Navajo Nation. The next two shows are going to be from the Navajo Nation. We will give you an update. Look at it on Facebook. And we will keep you posted. And I'm looking forward to unveiling and engaging and all of that. Okay, Alana, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to Navajo Digital Radio, Politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that's raising standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Politics, brought to you by the longest operating Navajo graphic design and advertising agency, CalNez Designs.